Stephen Reckland joins us today, award-winning author, journalist, and television host, the master of the barbecue. His books include The Barbecue Bible, How to Grill, and Planet Barbecue. He hosts the public television shows Primal Grill and Barbecue University. His new book is Man-Made Meals, The Essential Cookbook for Guys. Welcome back.
Nice to be here, Mindy.
Good to see you again. So most of your books have focused on the culture and practice of global grilling, but sometimes you just have to come into the kitchen.
Amen. And this was actually not a book that I wanted to write. My publisher, the late Peter Workman, had been after me for about 10 years to do it. And I think his reasoning was, you know, having made so many guys and women, but largely guys comfortable with the grill, bring them in on doors, indoors. And it turned out to be a lot of fun. You know, after college, I went to I lived in Paris for a year studying medieval cooking in Europe on a Watson grant. And part of what I did was attended and then worked at a cooking school called La Varenne. I was kind of the simultaneous translator from the French chefs to the largely American audience. So cooking indoors, despite all the barbecue stuff, something I was very comfortable with.
Yeah. Now, what was your hesitation when your publisher said I wanted you to do this?
To be honest with you, first of all, what really juices me about my books and barbecue is sort of getting out in the field, traveling, going into the back alleys and sort of remote third world grilling hotspots and kind of unearthing what people are doing. And I didn't sort of see a backstory with this until my wife Barbara happened to be reading a book called Thomas Jefferson's Crème Brûlée. Now, that's a book about the 5 years that he spent in Paris as a sort of a roving foreign minister with the assignment of drumming up trade for the fledgling, what would become the fledgling United States. And he went there with a very specific agenda, aside from developing trade. He wanted a total immersion course in French cuisine. He apprenticed one of his slaves, James Hemings, to a French chef. When he came back to Monticello, he brought more than 80 crates of cooking equipment, wine, food. He introduced America to champagne, Dijon mustard, Parmesan cheese, French fries, of course, macaroni and cheese, and the creme brulee. So Barbara was reading this book. She looked up one night and said, hey, you know, the first America's first foodie wasn't Julia Child. It was Thomas Jefferson. Well, bingo.
There you go.
There was my backstory.
Well, it's funny because I have that jotted down here because it's a cookbook, but it's not just a book of recipes. You know, you've got techniques and how-tos. But the other fun part in here is the interviews with what you call food dudes like Michael Pollan, Mark Bittman, actor Stanley Tucci. But you write that that you asked this writer, Thomas, is it Crawell? Is that how you pronounce it? Who wrote this book, Thomas Jefferson's Crème Brûlée. You ask him to sort of channel Jefferson.
Correct.
And you ask them, all these guys, similar questions. And I'm going to get to that because I'm going to ask, I want you to answer some of those questions.
Sure.
Well, just a few of them. But so tell us about the what you were shooting for besides recipes. You've got the food dudes, but you've got, you know, what do you need in the kitchen? How do you eat a lobster, carve a turkey? You've got all that stuff in there.
Well, I guess what I tried to accomplish with this book is nothing less than a crash course on culinary literacy for guys. And I started sort of with a list of all the tasks that I thought any self-respecting male should know how to do, right? That includes shucking an oyster without driving the knife through the palm of your hand, cooking a lobster, smoking a turkey, frying a turkey, carving a turkey, grilling the perfect steak. And that list which is typical of all my books, grew and grew and grew. And finally, the book is a 650-page monster. But one of the most fun parts of the book for me was the food dude essays, because that was a way, in a sense, to bring some personality into the book. The food dudes, there are a couple of high-profile chefs like Thomas Keller and Jose Andreas, who observed, by the way, to lead the tribe, you have to be able to feed the tribe. I thought that was great. But most of my food dudes are actually not professional chefs. They're activists, they're performers, actors. But they're all passionate about food, and I felt like they all had something to say that could sort of inspire other men around the subject of food.
Yeah. And some of the answers are, you know, some are very entertaining. I think Stanley said something about having wine being one of the three ingredients you must have in the kitchen.
Exactly. To drink while he's cooking.
Exactly. So I picked three questions that you asked some of the similar questions of all of your food dudes. And what are the three dishes every guy should know how to cook?
Every guy should know how to make steak. Every guy should know how to cook a lobster, because if you're in a mixed company and a lobster comes up, you don't want to pull a Woody Allen. and I think every guy should know how to make breakfast. You know, every guy should have a great breakfast, because hopefully you're going to have a family, and the first time you cook for your kids, it's a magical moment. First time you cook for a date that stays over, it's a magical moment. So
yeah, now cooking the steak. Can you use the grill for that, or are you talking about cooking the steak in the kitchen?
And this was a great surprise for me, because having spent almost 20 years advocating cooking steak on a grill, I was not a little surprised to discover how great a steak can be made in a cast iron skillet. One of my sort of favorite recipes in the book, it's just simply called skillet steak, and you brown it in a skillet and then finish roasting it in the oven. So it's virtually no labor. I've come to think of the cast iron skillet as the kettle grill of the indoors. I mean, it gives you that same sear and that same sort of crust and luscious mouthwatering texture.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love the cast iron pans because skillets, because for that very reason, you get it hot enough and you can, you know, sear your meat, whatever it is, and then put it in the oven.
Absolutely.
And it's great. All right, so what are the three ingredients you need as a cook?
Well, the three ingredients that I can't live without, and I'm going to, you know, avoid the obvious, salt and pepper. Mm-hmm. Number one, extra virgin olive oil. Number two, fresh lemon, ideally Meyer lemon, because you've got both the aromatic zest and the acidic juice. And number three, chili peppers. I mean, for me, it's all about heat. I cannot live without chilies.
All right. So the third question I chose from your questions was, do men and women cook differently?
Well, I believe they do. First of all, I believe when women cook, there's a nurturing quality to it. When men cook, there's sort of a theatrical showing off quality. I believe that men cook more loudly. That is, we like big, bold flavors. When women cook, I think they cook meals. When men cook, we tend to cook dishes. One of my goals in writing Man Made Meals is sort of to encourage guys to think whole meals and not just dishes.
And I know you say this is a book for guys, but I think this is a book for anybody who's, you know, maybe not comfortable in the kitchen and isn't sure, you know, how to maneuver and what tools you need. And there's lots of great tips and techniques that I think are applicable to both men and women.
Well, thank you. And, you know, the whole Man Made Meals, I mean, I'm sticking my tongue in my cheek a little bit. It's obviously it's a great basic book for everybody. And it starts with the equipment you need, the basic cooking techniques, how to stock a larder, how to shop, right?
I was going to say, you have these, I was going to mention some of these 10 principles you have. But first, I have to talk about a tip you had in there that brought me right back to my childhood. And this is to cook the perfect baked potato. You say, cook it impaled on a 10-penny nail. And my grandmother did that.
Well, you know, the funny thing is I have just seen now somebody is selling potato nails, you know, which are 10 bucks a piece as opposed to 10 cents a piece. But the idea is that the metal conducts the heat to the center of the baked potatoes. You get a very light, fluffy exterior and it cooks more quickly.
Right. So some of these principles, knowledge is power, you say. So the best way to eat well is to cook well. And everybody's trying to be a little bit healthier. So then I guess that kind of comes into the shopping aspect as well. How to buy the right ingredients and how to cook them. And it doesn't have to be as difficult as it seems.
Well, very much so. And there's kind of a strong activist message in the book. I mean, I do encourage people to buy organic meats, heritage pork, grass-fed steak. We can really have a big impact, not only on our personal health and the health of our families, but also our communities by the way we shop. And that's important for guys to think about, as well as everybody to think about.
And buying what's in season.
Super important. You're talking to a guy right now who is happy to eat salmon 6 weeks a year because he knows it's fresh and in season rather than, you know, I'm not looking for blueberries in January. I can't wait till I get up to New England and have them in the summer.
Yeah, and it's another good tip. You don't need to know how to cook everything.
Far better, you're far better off mastering, a dozen, 18 essentials than trying to learn every recipe in a food magazine.
And you mentioned the flavor. You said for most guys, bolder equals better. And you had some suggestions in here from A to Z.
Yeah, there's a section called Flavor Blasters from A to Z that would be starting with anchovies, finishing with the zest of citrus fruit, orange, lemon, and stopping at pimenton, smoked paprika, fish sauce, miso, some of my other flavor boosters along the way.
Yeah. How you cook matters as much as what you cook. Flames, smoke, sharp implements, blowtorches. I mean, we've got with the blowtorch oatmeal.
and blowtorch salmon and actually the deconstructed, reconstructed Bananas Foster. And this may be another way where how guys cook differs a little bit from how women cook. Anything that involves a power tool or that could land you in the emergency room, you know, that's right up our alley.
Yeah. And you've sort of touched on this, the understanding the importance of quality. And, you know, when you have a nice piece of meat or a nice piece of fish, you really don't need a lot of other things.
That is so true. And one of my food dudes, Mark Bittman, you know, made an observation that we certainly practice, which is eat less meat, but eat better meat.
Right. Know the value of money. You say some of the most popular guy dishes, you know, wings, brisket, short ribs, originated to make inexpensive cuts of meat palatable.
But at the same time, there are times when you should spend more money. For example, if you're buying Spanish ham, I mean, you know, you pay for what you get. Cheese, ham. You have to know when to dig into your pocket and when you can cut corners.
Right. And here's another tip I didn't know that I thought was interesting was for really soft, creamy eggs, use 3 yolks but 2 whites.
That comes from another of my food dudes, Nathan Myhrvold, the modernist cuisine madcap food scientist from Seattle. And by using the extra yolk, you completely change the texture. The scrambled eggs become incredibly creamy.
Mm. So talk about the food dudes for a minute, because I'm sure that was a lot. You mentioned it was a lot of fun. Did you learn things you didn't know from them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I would say sort of, in terms of the cooking knowledge, I mean, I think I had most of that down. Although, you know, certain reminders like preheat your pan before you add the food. And we actually spent a lot of time sort of figuring out, could we do that in the recipes and say, you know, preheat your pan for a minute before you add the food, because you'll get a much better sear. Foods will cook more quickly. But in the end, that just felt too complicated to calibrate. So I offered advice. But there were also sort of poignant reminders. Josh Ruxin, who's a development and aid and development guy in Rwanda, and bringing up his family there. And he sort of pointed out the importance of cleaning your plate.
Mm.
Something we don't think about in abundant America, but very interesting. And then, of course, Thomas Jefferson was an endless... By the way, he had very strong vegetarian leanings. He was... I asked him his favorite meal, and it, you know, it was vegetables or salad from his garden.
Let me see, asked him.
Through Thomas Crowell. But one of the questions I asked all the food guys was, what's your favorite seduction dish? You know, because mm-hmm. this is an important right. role of cooking, especially
course,
for young men. And almost all answered that... what you make is less important than you know how to handle yourself in the kitchen. But Jefferson had a really interesting reply. Apparently he organized a dinner between Alexander Hamilton and James Madison, who were mortal, bitter enemies. And he, in effect, seduced them with a 16-course French meal that ended with champagne. and he talked about sort of the seductive powers of a great meal. And, you know, changed the course of American history.
I want to get that book, by the way. That's that book.
Super
that Barbara
interesting
turned
book.
Yeah, really. Talk a little bit about the travel. I mean, we've talked about this before, but you've had such an interesting career with, traveling all over and studying these different cultures and what people do with fire.
Yeah. So my beat is sort of Planet Barbecue, and it really my whole, I never set out to write about barbecue or make barbecue TV shows or anything. But in November of 1994, this idea sort of came to me one day, and it was that grilling is the world's most universal cooking method, but it's done differently everywhere, and in a way much more differently than, let's say, baking or than simmering. So I had this idea to travel around the world and document how people grill in different cultures. And the first fruit of that was my book, The Barbecue Bible. And it was such an intriguing idea that I traveled all over North America for BBQ USA. I reprised the idea 15 years later in my kind of last barbecue book, which was Planet Barbecue. But, you know, grilling is really what made us human. Okay, I'd don't know if you've ever read the books of Richard Wrangham, Catching Fire, but it's sort of all about how the discovery of cooking with fire changed our whole metabolism, physiognomy, our social relationships. If you look at prehistoric ancestors like Homo robustus that ate meat raw, they look like apes. If you look at the skulls of our human ancestors that did cook with fire, like Homo erectus, you know, you could sit next to one on a subway and it wouldn't seem too out of place. So I think in some funny way, it's not only is it fun to do and great to eat, but we have this primal ancestral memory of that moment when we stopped being beasts and we became human. And it was thanks to a barbecue grill.
So you've got the barbecue cookbooks, this new one now that's moved into the kitchen. You wrote a novel. What are you working on next?
Well, I'm working on another book in the barbecue series. It's a book on smoking. Now, I touch on smoking in all of my barbecue books, but this is going to focus on smoking, hot smoking, cold smoking, smoke cocktails, smoking guns, smoke butter. I just got back from a terrific 3-week tour through Scandinavia, the UK, and Italy investigating smoking. So I'm hoping to bring a little of that Planet Barbecue magic to the smoke book, too.
All right, Stephen Reichlin, his new book is Man-Made Meals, The Essential Cookbook for Guys. Thanks for stopping in.
Hey, always a pleasure, Mindy.